So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, and welcome to 90 Day Fiancé NK. I'm Mr. O, and today, Ms. H and I will be discussing Season 2, Episode 14 of The Other Way, the new episode of Darcy and Stacey, and the final part for the tell-all of Happily Ever After. On The Other Way, Sumit tries to soften up his parents, Brittany tries to secure her divorce, Melissa tells us what she's been keeping from Tim, Kenny awkwardly meets Armando's family, and Ariella gets some very surprising news about her baby. On the tell-all, Angela just keeps yelling at everyone, Eric keeps making up new expressions, and we talk babies with Tanya and Sinjin, and Jess shows off her new man. Since this is the last week of Happily Ever After, we'll unveil our power rankings for all the main cast. We'll be back again next week to talk about the new episode of The Other Way. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star rating and subscribe. And if you watch Love After Lockup, please listen to our other podcast, Love After Lockup UK. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and enjoy.
Hello, Mr. O.
Hello, Miss H.
How are things?
Things are going pretty well. I'm getting ready to go on a little fake beach vacation, so I'm excited about that. You know, after I put it off in the summer.
I was going to say, the beach part is real.
Yes, the beach part is real. Yeah. The vacation part is not. I'm still working there.
Right. So, I mean, it feels like some of these people live pretty much permanently on a fake vacation.
That sounds accurate. They spend most of their time wondering how they're going to get a job and then never actually getting one.
Right.
All right, so let's start. We're going to start because it was the end of Happily Ever After. We're going to end with that so we can get into our power rankings. So we're going to start with The Other Way. And I will start with Kenny and Armando.
Okay, mucho gusto.
Mucho gusto. Mucho gusto, mucho gusto, mucho gusto. Okay. Kenneth has been in Mexico for the week. And he and Armando, and it seems so weird, it's like episode 14, he's been there for a week.
I know,
and
right?
He and Armando are on their way to pick up Hannah from Armando's parents' place. Armando is excited to get to Hannah so they can all be together as a family. Armando in the car tells Kenny that he is the second person after Hannah's mom that he's brought to meet his family. Armando is nervous about finding the right time to tell them that he and Kenny are engaged, so he takes off his ring in the car, which Kenny is not super pumped about. Kenny starts to get nervous about what exactly he should say to them when they meet, since his Spanish is very, very bad. In the end, they settle on mucho gusto and then just repeat it like 1,000 times to each other. Mucho gusto, mucho gusto, mucho gusto. Like it's a mantra. Armando says that his mom is nervous as well when they talked earlier, and he hopes that his dad is there because otherwise he's going to have to make this whole introduction thing drag on and on for possibly years. Armando hopes that today is the day he can tell them about the engagement, but he's still not committing to it because, you know, things might not start off so hot. So as they pull in the dark, Armando starts to internally freak out about the moment that he seems to have been dreading for a long, long time. It looks like the whole extended family is there sitting around the fire pit waiting for them. When they get out of the car, Hannah runs and jumps into Kenny's arms and is wearing some really cool earmuffs. They were just perfect kid earmuffs. Armando's mom, Virginia, is glad that Armando is home, but it's uncomfortable seeing him there with a man. They do introductions and Kenny shares the entirety of all the Spanish he knows and expresses his regret about not knowing more Spanish before he came down there. Armando seems really, really nervous, so much so that he's kind of getting in the way of their interactions, and they're all just kind of sitting around in awkward silence. His dad is there, but he's staying in the house to avoid them, and then the mom brings them over to be able to talk, you know, more or less in private. After much cajoling, Virginia convinces Armando Sr. to come out, and he hugs Armando and then shakes Kenny's hand before saying very little else and then going back inside. Virginia and Kenny connect a little bit over how much they each miss their children since they are moved away. And things are going well enough, I guess, that Armando decides now is the time to make the announcement that he and Kenny are engaged. It's followed by what can only be described as stunned silence and an explanation that it wasn't a spur of the moment idea, which was again followed by more silence. When they ask mom what she's feeling, she just kind of says, it's his decision. In an interview, she says she's mostly disappointed that Armando didn't tell her before telling everyone, including his cousins and aunts. But she says that, but she's pretty clearly upset about the whole thing in general. She says that Armando's dad will be very surprised and also upset, which is why she is not going to tell him. Eventually, most of the family gets up to say goodbye. Kenneth is disappointed because he thought the engagement and announcement and meeting would go much better than it did. It's bad enough that Armando isn't even sure if they are allowed to stay. He asks his mom, who pointedly does not want to ask dad, but she says it's okay and she doesn't need to ask him. As they walk to their room, they talk about how poorly mom took the news and how Armando Sr. gave Kenny very bad vibes. Armando is still processing everything that has happened. He says the reaction wasn't what he was hoping for, but it kind of was what he was expecting. Kenny was surprised by how bad it went and worries that everybody now is going to see him as the big bad guy. All right, so what were your impressions on how well this all went down?
I mean, I'm really frustrated with Kenny. I mean, mm-hmm. Armando knows his family. He knew it was going to be like this. Right. I thought his family did the best that they could in Armando's eyes.
Sure.
You know, from Armando's perspective, he didn't think that this was going to be super smooth. He thought that his family is going to need some time to kind of process like one little bit of information at a time. And Kenny was pressuring Armando to tell right away, which is why I think like Armando, it was super awkward timing. Like he's like, I have an announcement. And it was just like, okay, now is really not the time, Armando. And then why is Kenny shocked that Armando's family reacted that way? It's just like, this is what he's been telling you the entire time.
And I think what it comes from is, I think if you remember way back to at the beginning when we met Kenny and he talked about his, you know, coming out story.
Yeah.
He was worried that his family was going to be like that and they weren't.
Right.
And they were super supportive and, you know, it was nothing but hugs and love. And so he was like, listen, I was nervous just like you were and it was fine. Mm-hmm. It'll be fine. Like, and so, and then, you know, years and years and years. But yes, in general, you should defer to the person who knows these people better than you do. Because, and it was like, at that point, it was like, I really feel like what his thought process was. And part of it was that I could see me there. Armando's head wasn't on straight. He was so distraught that he just wasn't really thinking clearly.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of like, well, this is bad and this is going poorly and this is super awkward. And if I make a whole separate announcement later about the engagement, we're going to have to do this all over again. So fuck it. We're just going to get it all out there now. Like,
I guess that's true.
Let's go. There's not going to be two separate meetings like this anymore now. It's just, it's done. It's all out there. Which is what Kenny was trying to get him to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely think there was, as good as they are, there was definitely a communication issue between the two of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
When it came up as, you're pressuring me, I'm not pressuring you, right?
Yeah.
Because I think, and I'm not going to say he wasn't pressuring, and Armando was definitely taking it as pressure.
Yes,
but
definitely.
But Kenny was trying to give it as advice. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what I would do. And so it was just, you know, so it's there, and that those little things, especially when we, you know, you're getting together with somebody you don't know, about those little things, that those little habits of communication that you're just not used to yet. So
Definitely. I just think that, you know, Kenny's expectations of even the dad meeting Armando Sr., like, I get that it didn't seem really great. You know, like Kenny said, he got bad vibes. But baby steps for him. Like, this is a big deal that he's even gotten this far within 1 week.
Right. That's true. It was like 1 week. I mean, he shook his hand.
Yeah.
Like that it's one of those definitely, you know, I don't think Armando could fully get, like, put him in the perspective of how, like, how much of a different place his dad was in.
Yes.
That, like, I got the vibe from him before that, like, if the week before Armando told him, like, was like, oh, no, if I knew a man was gay, I would never shake his hand. No. I don't know. I'm the touch a gay guy. I wouldn't do that. They can live however they want, but I'm not going to touch him. Like, you know? Yeah. And so, like, even that he came out and shook his hand was, like, was a big deal for him.
Right. Yeah. I feel like looking at the growth instead of where they are probably would make Kenny feel a little bit more encouraged about this situation specifically.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because they've definitely come a long way.
Right.
All right. Let's talk about Tim and Melissa. Tim is still looking for a job, despite the fact that he still technically has a job back in the U.S. Tim and Melissa have been tense since their last argument, where they felt that they were sacrificing more. Melissa says it's been really bumpy, and she thinks that he's still keeping things from her. Melissa teases a secret that could be difficult to tell Tim. She meets with her friend David and her brother Miguel to talk about it. Miguel tells us that he liked Tim and thought he really loved Melissa since the cheating. But since the cheating, he thinks that there are just two different Tims. Melissa tells them she was seeing other people when they weren't together, and she had a sexual relationship with a friend of a friend. Melissa doesn't think she was wrong, but she also wants to be honest. Miguel says that, you know, if this were him, he'd just rather not know. All right, so would you rather not know if you had a break and then you got back together again, like who they were with?
If it was, and that's where it comes in the gray area. I feel like if it was a real break and we both had believed that we were broken up.
Yes.
Right. And then we got back together. I wouldn't want to know.
Right.
Right. That was like what you did while we were broken up and you were an independent person is your business. And it doesn't any more than you would like demand to know. And I guess people do this, like who people dated or slept with or anything before you got together. Right.
No, I feel like I'm in the same camp as you, and I have been in that situation where I have, mm-hmm. where I thought, you know, my ex of, gosh, at the time it was 4 years, we had broken up, and we were broken up for a good 6 months before we decided, okay, let's, like, try this again. And, like, I know my ex, like, he's kind of a man whore. Like, I just assumed he, like, slept with other people. And the only reason why I even asked was, like, for, you know, medical purposes, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, should we be careful? Like, yeah, right, you know, like, right. stuff like that. But, I right. mean, like, other than that, I didn't want to hear details. I didn't want to hear how many. I didn't want, you know, like, no. I would rather just not know, because you don't want that at the back of your mind. And you're right. Like, it, just like you wouldn't want to hear about your ex or your current partner's, like, history with their exes. Kind of the same thing. Like, this doesn't mean anything to your relationship. So I don't know. I kind of feel like Melissa doesn't have to tell Tim. But I get that if she's trying to tell him he needs to be honest about everything, mm-hmm. that it does seem like a double standard.
I think it comes in, and this is the issue, I think, is where it is I don't know that it was very clear how much of a break they were on.
Sure. Right?
It's definitely, you know, a Ross and Rachel from Friends type thing. Oh, like, where we weren't really broken up. We were just, like, taking a break. Like, that wasn't, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, because she had said something, well, we never actually talked about whether we were still exclusive or not. Like, and so it was, I don't think it was I think it was more of a gray zone of are we still together or not? Mm-hmm. And not that's what I was saying at the beginning. If it was clear to everyone involved that you were definitely broken up at the time, then it's not something that needs to be shared. If he still thinks you guys were together or, like, you know, I need to think about things. And then you sleep with other people and say, well, I decided we were broken up. And it's like, nah, 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 nah. That's not how it works. So I think she's kind of playing it into, I wonder if he's going to believe that in that interim time they were actually broken up.
I think so. I think he said at some point, I feel like in an interview, that, you know, he's trying to win her back, meaning that he lost her,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so I kind of feel like he wouldn't be surprised if she had a relationship or was sleeping with someone else.
Right.
But I also get the impression that Tim is one of those people that will not get it out of his head if you give him too much information about her past.
Sure. Right. I mean, it's also the other thing you worry about and that I think she worried about, and it's a part of the reason she doesn't really want to share it with him, is, like, you don't want him to be like, well, we're even now.
Yes.
Like, mm-hmm. we're even now. Like,
right.
You
we
had
did
your
the
guy,
same thing
I had my
another.
Girl. We had the same thing. Yep. We're even. It's done. We can just move on. It's like, that's – no. That's not – they're not even. It doesn't work like that either. Like, it doesn't work – even if you both did exactly the same thing, they don't cancel each other out.
No.
Like, it doesn't work like that.
But at the same time, I think that they both do need to move on. You know?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
She really does need to forgive Tim, and he needs to – not take this, you know, personally. I don't know if that's what I really want to say, but like not be upset about it, you know, and they just have to move past it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, I just feel like everybody is right. I feel like they neither of them can get past, are willing or like, willing, I don't know if it's the right word, but they're not getting past it. And I think everybody keeps telling them you're better off broken up. And like the more we see of them, the more it seems like they're better off broken up.
Yeah, probably.
All right. So next up is, wait, a bit too high. Let's go with Jenny and Submit. So we get some random monkeys and chickens on the street before Jenny tells us that it's only been 3 weeks since she got to India. And she quickly recaps her and Submit's relationship so far. At this point, Submit has gone to talk to his parents about him and Jenny, and she seems to be impatiently checking her phone for updates. Then we see some more chickens and a cow, and then Submit making a lonely walk down the street to get up the working up the courage to finally tell his parents more or less to stay out of his business. Then we switch to Sana and Anil, Sumit's parents, who are waiting at their place to forbid Submit from marrying Jenny. At long last, he gets there, touches their feet to show proper respect, and then starts talking about his situation. He tells them that he never planned to fall in love with Jenny, but he has, and at this point tells them that they can't have him but not Jenny. They are a package deal. Sana very quickly says that she will never accept Jenny as one of them, and it is entirely because of her age. Anil backs her up and says that such an age difference is not acceptable in India. They can't change society and make it acceptable and have to live as part of it. Since a mango tree can't go oranges, and they can't be okay with a relationship just because it would be okay in other countries like America. They bring up the logistical care of choosing to care for either his elderly parents or his elderly wife, and Sana starts to get very distraught that he is going to leave them for her. They start to argue about old wounds like the arranged marriage and the very expensive divorce, and Submit starts to become agitated and angry. He really starts screaming at them for not supporting him. They admit that they were in the wrong with the marriage, but that doesn't mean that being with Jenny is the right thing. He reminds them, and kind of we learn, that things were so bad he was contemplating suicide. He doesn't understand why they are making him choose between them and Jenny. They could just both be there. To end, Anil says that they will try their best to think about accepting Jenny. And at this point, he says to us in an interview that he doesn't know what they would say if Submit asked them to approve of the marriage. Now, having gotten antsy waiting for Submit at home, Jenny waits to meet and hear from him at a restaurant instead. When he finally gets there, he recaps the conversation that we already heard, with Jenny chiming in to basically agree with him a couple times. He does say that he won't give up at his parents, but he's getting them to move forward to accepting what he needs. They consider it a small win, even if they don't have what they want just yet. All right, so I feel like, you know, these parents, up until, you know, this season, maybe even a couple seasons, they've just been like a brick wall of resistance, right? That's all we know of them. They were the ones who were stopping everything. But I don't know. They seem to be softening up a little bit. Do you think they're moving in the right direction?
Well, I think the fact that the family is funding the divorce.
Yeah.
And then the dad, definitely you could tell he feels guilty about forcing Summit into that marriage. Because he said, like, I was wrong.
Right. And I think that's – and so that's what's tricky about it, is because they don't – they are funding the divorce and he needs their money to fund the divorce.
Yes.
But the reason they're funding the divorce is because the divorce was their idea and their fault.
Right.
So it's like, well, the marriage was their idea. The marriage was their idea and their fault. Right.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, my jaw kind of dropped at the price that he said. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, not the price itself, because he said it was like, what, $20,000 or something.
Right. Which, but in India?
Yeah. But in India. And that's what he was like. He was like, I worked like most of my career to make that much money.
Right. Yeah, and it just seems like, okay, then, I don't know, why would you spend your life savings on a divorce for your son? That seems like a bad financial decision.
Well, because otherwise the son said he was going to kill himself. Like, that's what it comes down to. He said, I told you 3 times.
Yeah.
Like, this is over. I cannot, because that's what it came down to, was he said, I cannot live in this marriage and I will not live in this marriage. And so, I feel like they kind of, he almost sees it as paying that much money to, you know, save his son, I guess.
So I think if they care about him enough like that, then they're going to consider his happiness. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of feel like, yeah, I think they probably are softening, right? I think their biggest concern, well, other than what society thinks, sure, is that they're not going to get taken care of. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Summit kind of said, like, okay, well, I can take care of everybody. You know, it's not a big deal. Like, then his parents, like, I feel like felt like, okay, well, we're going to be taken care of. So, right, you know, that's something.
Right, right. And it's also, yeah, he could have, like, pointed out, like, Jenny has daughters. They'll take care of her. Like, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I'll take care of you guys. Which is right, something that seems, it's actually really important when you're as old as they are and just spent your entire life savings. That yeah, you're like, you kind of have to take care of me now when I get right, too old to do anything. That's yeah, on you.
I love how Jenny says that she is in perfect health. I was like, oh, okay.
All right. All right. All right. Yeah. Like, sure. Sure. I really did like, you know what I really did? I really like the feet touching thing. Like, that's one of my, mm-hmm, some of my favorite parts of a show is like some of the cultural,
yeah,
like things that we don't, that I didn't know about. I was like, I didn't know that was a thing. That's neat. Like, I like, mm-hmm, that. That's, I feel like that's what we should get more of from The Other Way. I want more of the cultural, like, what's considered polite? What are the polite moves in other cultures?
Right. That's why the Ji-hoon Devin wedding,
yeah,
from last year was so much fun.
Right. Those are the, yeah, that's the kind of stuff I want out of you, out of this. You know, yeah, it's fun. It is just fun.
Definitely. Not things like Brittany and Yazan.
Oh, not fun.
So Brittany arrives in Chicago to finalize her divorce. She has half lied to Yazan, and he thinks she is just there to see her sister's new baby. Her mom goes to pick up Brittany, and Brittany fills her mom in on the craziness. She tells us that they started fighting immediately over culture, and Brittany's feeling pressure to convert to Islam and get married right away. Brittany tells us that she married her high school sweetheart a few years ago, and they are still married, and Yazan doesn't know. Brittany recaps to her mom on all the family drama with Yazan's family. Brittany's mom thinks that Brittany just needs to be honest, and Yazan deserves the truth. Brittany agrees, but she still defends her decision to keep things a secret, saying that they'll all flip out. Brittany's mom thinks that she needs to understand that Yazan has always consulted his parents, and that's why their opinion matters. Brittany says they are expecting her to get married when she gets back, and that she will delete her social media. Brittany finally has her court date. They come out of the courthouse 3 hours later, and she's still married. She found out that nothing was actually uploaded to the clerk's office, so she will need to refile. She's going to stall for longer. Brittany tries to go Karen on their asses and says that she wants to talk to their managers, but Brittany's just kind of stuck there until she gets this divorce. All right, so if you were Yazan, what would you think Brittany's really doing at this point? Like, let's say she successfully stalls for like a month.
I would know. I at this point, when she asks to stall again, I would think she just moved back to America and she was,
yes,
done.
I would think so too.
I would think she's not coming back. Yeah,
right.
So I don't know. These people are both so delusional. Like,
yes,
and that's just getting them deeper and deeper and deeper into trouble, because both of them just have this idea that things are just gonna change. So many things are gonna change just like automatically and drastically. Like, his family is just gonna accept me and, like, as I am, and I get to keep all my – they want to delete all the social media.
Right.
And, like –
yeah, right. That's not happening.
No, that's not happening. Like,
yeah,
it's as shallow as it seems, that's a huge, like, part of her personality.
Yeah, and I think, like, more so than that, I think it's more of a, you can't tell me what to do. She definitely, sure, has that kind of attitude.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, if they told her to do anything, like, you know, maybe even something that she's not even, like, super thrilled about, she'd be like, nope, you can't tell me what to do. Just to spite you, I'm going to do it anyway.
Sure. Sure. I mean, there's so much of it. There's just like that's my delusion too. It's like, okay, so you know, if they found out of this marriage, it would be a disaster and, yes, it would just be an explosion.
Right.
And so rather than being like, oh, wow, maybe then this situation isn't something we should be forcing through, you're like, no, I'll just hide it from them. Just going to hide it from him. Like,
right.
It just seems like if you know that this thing is such going to be so adverse, it's got a situation you got to get yourself out of.
Yeah. her reasoning is so dumb too. Like, well, it doesn't matter, like, if I tell them or not, they're like, you know, just gonna get crazy. It's just like, well, you should be honest with them anyway,
right? Like, yeah, yeah. And it, that's what I'm saying. If the truth is going to set them off, like, then that's not work. That's not going to work.
No.
Like, it's lying about it. It's only going to solve it temporarily.
Right.
And if it's not this thing that blows up in your face, it's another thing that's going to blow up in your face. But sometimes something's going to blow up in your face.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
All right. Nothing else for them. I mean, it's pretty short, right?
Nothing else.
Yeah. All right. So I think things not blowing up in your face, but definitely blow ups with Ariella and Binyam.
Yeah.
So they've been together for a month now in Ethiopia. Her due date is in 6 weeks. I feel like we covered a lot of time in this one, by the way.
Yes.
Her due date's in 6 weeks, but then I think we covered 5 weeks worth of time. Because at the end, her due date's in 1 week. And her parents are trying to book travel to get there before the baby does. We recap some of the stuff from before, like the crappy unfurnished apartments and her nervous yelling after her mom left. But today, they are moving into the compromise apartment. Binyam struggles to get the luggage up the stairs, and as soon as they get in, Ariella starts telling him all the things that need to be done, like painting, covering the couch. She sits down and apologizes for some of the things she yelled at him in the previous episode. She does remind him that here in Ethiopia, she is basically alone and hopes that now that their living situation is settled, they'll start to get along better. They start to discuss what they'll need for the baby, which looks like it's going to be supplied mostly by Ariella's mother. The baby supplies bring up their other financial issues. Binny is not working, and Ari is paying for everything out of savings now, but that won't last for long after the baby's born. Then cultural differences come up when Ari says that she'll need help with the baby, which is really not something that happens in Ethiopian culture. She's concerned that when he starts working, Binyam will be out of the house way too much for her taste. In the next scene, they are on their way to buy a car, because when he gets a job... public transportation is too unreliable and taxis are too expensive. Or at least that's what they thought. They go to the import lot and look for a 2008, well, it wasn't called a Toyota, but it was a Toyota Yaris,
yes,
which is a 10-year-old compact hatchback. And it's selling for around $22,000.
What the hell?
The car dealer says that the prices are high for two reasons. One is that Ethiopia is landlocked, so shipping is expensive. But really, more of it is that the taxes roughly double the cost of any vehicle, which still $11,000.
It's insane.
Ariella cannot believe what she's hearing, because in the United States, that car is less than a third of that price. They ask to see a cheaper car, but that one is still $17,000. Binyam takes her aside to explain that this is Africa and these are the going rates for cars. He explains that here, since everything seems like it's sold secondary market, then if they get into trouble and need to sell the car back, they'll be able to do so, and the car prices don't really go down. So they'll make most of their money back. Ariella honestly doesn't know how they can afford any of these cars, but in an interview Binyam just says he'd be okay if her parents just paid for it. And then we get to the part where Ariella is 1 week from her due date, and she's going in for her prenatal checkup. During her last checkup, they told her that the baby was breech, and she's hoping that it's turned over. After the ultrasound starts, though, the technician tells her that the baby hasn't turned around yet. She asks the technician lots of questions about whether she'll need a C-section and how common they are in Ethiopia, but he's very careful not to say anything that might count as medical advice. But he does say that C-sections are not very common. He also mentions that it seems like her fluid levels are low. When the obstetrician sees the chart, she says that the baby's position means she'll have to have a C-section, and the low fluid levels mean that she'll have to have the baby today. This news immediately sends Ariella into a nervous tailspin, and Binyam seems to be shocked into silence. She is majorly freaked out because her parents are not there yet, and that's where the episode ends. So, where do we want to start? All right, so let's start with the car. Like,
that is an insane amount of money for a car.
Insane. Okay, so
how does anyone own a car then?
That's what I was thinking. I was like, they walked through the street. The street was full of cars. We saw all the cars on the street. So I did this. I, you know, with a grain of salt, because this is like 30 seconds of internet research.
Right.
If you wanted to buy that car in the United States, right? where I live at least, it would run about $3,000.
Okay. Like $3,000 to $4,000. That's so funny. I was thinking $3,000.
Right?
Yeah.
Which I looked at that, which when you break it down like this, is about 12% of the median salary in the United States.
Okay.
Right? So sure. Like a month's worth of pay for most people. Okay. Right? Pre-tax. Okay. In Ethiopia, $22,000 mm-hmm. is 7 years worth of salary for that someone.
So insane.
Yeah. Like yeah. That is crazy. That would be like if it was like $80,000 or $90,000.
Right. For a used car. That's so yeah. crazy. Well, here's the thing too, is their whole reason why they wanted a car was because it sounded like, one, the expense, but two, it was mostly because public transportation was unreliable. And so they were saying that, you know, they wanted to minimize the amount of commute time so baby would be in the house more.
Right.
Right. Sure, so if sure. it takes you like 2 hours to commute to your job, that's like 4 hours that you could have been spending in your house, you know, and
yeah,
not
helping
commuting.
You with the baby, and you're just like, yeah, and you're sitting on a bus instead. Sure.
Right.
Totally.
And so it just, I don't know. It just seems like these are the sacrifices you have to make. And I think Ari is really spoiled in that she, you know, like even her saying that he shouldn't be working, she just wants him near. It's like, okay, that's great. They're living off of you right now. Sure. Where are you getting your money? And what happens when that gravy train ends?
So confused, totally confused how they were really gung-ho about, well, he needs to work. He needs to work to support the family. And she's like, well, I don't want you working all day. And it's like, well.
Yeah, because I don't want to be alone.
I don't want to be alone. Like that. Somebody's got to work. Somebody's got to make the money.
Yeah.
Right? And so,
I don't
yeah.
know. She just comes off as kind of a trust fund baby. So when she talks about her savings, it's
I don't
kind
understand.
Of like,
yeah, her savings. Like, yeah, she just totally is like, I don't understand. There's just money. It's just money.
Right.
You know? Well, the only people who say it's just money have way too much of it.
Right. I mean, I definitely got that impression too. Like, who just gets up in their mid-20s and travels the world and is like, whatever. Is she a writer? I feel like she is or something.
That's what it says, freelance writer, which is
yeah.
not a lucrative profession
no,
at all.
Definitely not. So it's kind of like, yeah, I don't know how you're like doing all of this. And it's like, well, probably living off of your parents. So it makes sense why your mom is like coming and shipping all the baby stuff with her.
Right. I mean, and I think it's one of those things that I feel like he's okay with that now, mm-hmm. but I don't know. Is it going to end up being like a family Libby situation? Like if mom and dad are paying for everything, they're going to be like, well, we really think you guys should move back to the U.S. now.
No, like, I, you know, honestly, I think the bigger problem with family Libby is that Andre is okay with taking the money, but he also wants to be calling the shots.
Uh-huh.
Like definitely out of the two of them, baby and Ari, like baby is not calling the shots, right?
That's true.
And he doesn't have kind of the personality that is like, I am the man of the house. I should be making all the decisions. He's like, whatever makes you happy, babe.
Right.
You know,
that's
so
true.
I feel
that's
like,
true.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's not the same dynamic. But speaking of like kind of cultural differences, like let's remember that baby has a baby like with a U.S. woman.
Yeah.
So like that whole thing with the cultural thing, like, oh, like, you know, like I'm not used to helping out. It's like, well, did you help out with the first one? Because I can't imagine that these two women had that different of a view of, you know, how much you should be helping out with the
sure.
kids.
Sure. Right. And then, of course, obviously the big thing, and I think it seems like next week the baby's going to be here, will be the delivery next week. But mm-hmm. whew, that's always a shocker when you get the baby is getting born today.
Yeah.
Which is actually not C-section wise, but that's actually how my first kid was born. Like my ex went in for her last checkup just like this. And they're like, your fluid level's low. We're having the baby today. And she was like, oh, are we? Okay. I got a phone call. She's like, she said, we're leading me to the hospital. Like, take off work now.
So she was a week early then?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. Natural birth or C-section?
Natural.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I will say, I'll give an anecdotal story. I don't know any of the medical rationale behind of this, but I had a friend, she was breech. And she said that when she was on her way to the hospital,
Yeah.
She was like just so excited. She's like really like caffeine drinker. She's really like a Coca-Cola person. She was like, yes, this baby's coming. I'm drinking Coca-Cola. So she was just like chugging soda in the car on the way to the hospital. And she said it made the baby like kick around a whole bunch and kicked right back over. The baby was not breached by the time they got to the hospital. So maybe y'all should just drink soda.
Yeah, something like that. Maybe, or listen to a doctor. Like,
don't drink soda.
It's Miss H, not Dr. H. Just
everybody. Oh yeah, that's true. And that was totally an anecdotal story.
Yes. Right. Nobody is prescribing Coca-Cola to pregnant women. Like, no. Okay.
No, don't do that. And this was before she was going into labor. Oh, sure. She was in labor already. Yeah, this isn't something you should just be chugging Coke, you know? All right. So let's talk Darcy and Stacy.
All right.
Before we get into the tell-all. So I think we've got to the point where we are, like, primarily focused on their partners. So let's talk Darcy and Georgie. So they're still dealing with the whole fact that Georgie is married and Darcy feels like she's dropping a bomb on everyone, having to reveal, like, ta-da, Georgie is married. She introduces Georgie to her friends, who seem to really like Georgie, and Georgie's doing his best to make a good impression, including buying them drinks, because that is the way to all their hearts is drunkenness.
Yeah, like, do you feel like any of the other guys could have picked that up, right? That was easy. I know, right? That was a gimme.
Yep. And then Georgie also meets Darcy's dad, Mike, and Darcy also has to tell him that Georgie is still married. And then, of course, everybody asks, when was the last time you saw your ex-wife? Blah, 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 blah. So Georgie, you know, says that the divorce proceedings are happening. And towards the end, he really wants to show Darcy that he's really serious and he's really committed. So it just seems natural that he's thinking about proposing to her.
Jeez. Okay,
then, I know, right? So then we get to Stacy and Florian. So basically the same old tired storyline is going on. Stacy's trying to figure out what's going on with the videos. And Florian tells her, you know, babe, it's fine. I love you, Angel, blah, 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 blah. And Stacy says, okay, this can't happen anymore. And Florian says, of course. And so Stacy forgives him. So then they all meet together with the friends and Stacy and Darcy. And Darcy's still concerned because she says that she can't believe Stacy has forgiven Florian when they have such incriminating evidence against him. And all the friends are still very suspicious. So at this point, Florian takes Stacy aside. They kind of, you know, try to regroup. And then Florian decides to tell her, oh, wait. Something did actually happen. I kissed her, and he definitely downplayed everything, but he said, but that is all that happened, and there's nothing more to tell. So Stacy cries, but we get the impression that she has forgiven Florian, as we are now later shown celebrating Florian's birthday along with Darcy and Stacy's mom's birthday. We have Darcy and Stacy's mom turning 70 and Florian turning 29. Together, they are 99.
Oh, all right.
All right. So, Florian.
I hate that he gets, like, my favorite lines from every episode because he's garbage, right?
He is.
But last week, he was like the Sneetchie. I hate the Sneetchie, right?
He sneeches.
And this time, he did that whole kiss. He's like, you listen, you listen, you listen. You're listening, you listen. You're listening, yeah. You listen. I kiss her a little bit. Little bit, just a little bit. I kiss her.
What does that even mean?
I kiss her just a little bit.
He is such a liar. Like, I'm sorry. Like, if you went from, like, let's, like, recap to episode one, adamantly denying that you even, like, were in the same room as this girl, right? You know, you go from there to, oh, there's pictures of us in the same room. Okay, we were in the same room. Like, but she faked it, blah, blah, blah. Now you have pictures of her near a bed. We had a photo shoot, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't anything. And, you know, it's like, then you have videos of you, like kissing. Oh, you know, and it's like he's changing his story little by little. And if you think about how, you know, far he has changed his story from the very beginning, this guy is so full of shit.
Oh, absolutely. Because even, okay, even if at this point he's telling the truth and all they did was kiss.
Yeah.
I will guarantee you it wasn't his choice that that's all they did. If he, right. If given the opportunity, given the chances, he would have done more than that. Like, why would right. you believe he wouldn't?
Yeah. I don't know. And it just, he's so gross to me. And the fact that he keeps on lying, because that's the other thing that I really dislike about him is total gaslighter, right? The entire time he's like telling Stacy that she's crazy and that, you know, like she doesn't trust him and like this is all her problem. I don't want to talk about this anymore because, you know, yeah, you don't trust me. This is
you
being
paired. You just don't trust me. I can't believe you would accuse me of such this thing that I did.
And getting all crazy mad at everybody else who confronts him, uh-huh. you know? And the reason why is because he was so vague about it and she just let it go. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, I think it's 100% Stacy's fault. She kind of, I don't want to say deserves, because she didn't deserve, no one deserves to get cheated on, right?
Sure.
But at this point, she has chosen to stay with him, even though she knows what an asshole this guy is, a cheating asshole. And so it's like, I don't feel bad for her now, because it's like, you have chosen to forgive him. You've chosen this for your life. So if this right. happens again, zero sympathy for you.
Right. Well, I mean, that's not just this show. We see this so many times. If they do it one more time, this is it. This is the last time.
Yeah.
And that's never the last time. Like, no. Never pull the trigger. I can't deal with this again. Or you promise me you never do this again. Where it's like, why would he? He got away with it every time he's done it. So why would he stop doing it?
Right. And then I love how she yells that she's a strong woman.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just like her and Darcy, like they, I feel like they go to the same affirmation classes.
Right. It's like, I don't know. It's like, I need better therapists. Like, because affirmation's not going to get it done. Like, all it says to me is that, if you, the way she says I'm a strong woman is totally like, I need to try to speak this into reality because I don't believe it.
I also felt like it was just full of doubt.
Yes. Yeah. Like I am
a strong woman.
Yeah.
I could leave you if I needed to.
Right.
Question mark.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. So Georgie, we keep saying him and it just doesn't seem to be all that much going on up there.
No, he seems really dumb to me.
Yeah.
And then that makes me, both of them, Stacy and Darcy, I feel like they make terrible choices in choosing their partner because they are 100% motivated by how their partner looks. These people contribute nothing to their lives. Mm-mm. They're not like intellectual. They're not like hardworking and like helping support. They don't seem to be especially interested in their family, like their existing family, their kids.
They're another piece of fashion. Like, yeah. That's what they are.
Yes, definitely. And so it's just kind of like, no wonder you guys are struggling to have like meaningful, healthy relationships. It's like, look at the guys you're choosing.
Right, right. I mean, to be fair, I mean, if given our three guys that we know Darcy with, he's probably the top of that garbage pile, right?
Yeah.
Like, right. I would pick him over Tom and Jesse.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's a pretty low bar.
Yeah, but I think the difference between Georgie, Tom, and Jesse is that Georgie is by far the dumbest of the three.
Yeah.
So it's almost like he kind of like Jesse, it's like he was a manipulator and he was like someone that knew what to say to make her feel bad. Uh-huh. I feel like Georgie's just clueless. Like if, you know, but at the same time, it's like, he's also kind of dopey. Like he's not even the kind of person who would care enough to try get revenge on you.
Sure. Sure. Like, yeah. I mean, yeah. Doesn't seem like he, to be fair, it is a little bit of both. It doesn't seem like he has the mental acuity to be manipulator,
right?
But he also just does, he doesn't seem like he'd be a grudge holder.
No, he's just like go with the flow.
Yeah, he'd be like, he does what you want somebody to do. If they choose to stay and they choose to do it, there, that's it. It's done. Whatever it was that put that in jeopardy is done.
Yeah, so maybe in some ways, like this is the best that Darcy's going to get, given her limited parameters of
what she's looking for, of her window. Yeah. Her window is a very small window that she's looking through for men. Like, it really is.
Yeah.
Like, which is weird because, like, she wouldn't ever, neither of them would pick a man that's all that much like their dad, which seems unusual.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, maybe their first husbands were like that, and now possibly they're just going extreme opposite.
Maybe, maybe.
All right, so now we're moving into the tell-all.
Right.
Which we didn't really hear from a lot of them. And this is part three, so it was only an hour.
Yes. Whew. I don't know. I'm glad they didn't try to stretch it into another hour.
I know.
Yeah, but so we already knew Paul and Karini weren't in it. We didn't hear anything from Libby and Andre.
Right.
Or from Kalani and Asuelu this time.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
All right. So let's start. Let's talk about Angela and Michael, because that's where the last one ended up.
Yep.
So we pick up right where we left off last time. Lydia has again suggested that Michael have a child with another woman. And if we're being generous, Michael chimes in to agree that there are other options. But of course, Angela interprets that as Michael wanting to sleep with other women and have a child with them. So of course, she just starts screaming at everyone. She cuts him off whenever he tries to explain, which is, you know, which he's just trying to say, I wasn't talking about sleeping with another woman. At this point, Angela says Michael can take his penis and go, and tells Aunt Lydia to shush because she's in America, and suggests that Michael shut his mouth and go marry Aunt Lydia. At this point, it seems like Lydia is mad enough that she's going to try to toy with Angela. So she tells Angela that she should be more submissive to Michael. And they start arguing weird semantics about Nigerian culture and Americans doing whatever they want. Angela and Skyla say that Michael is not respecting American culture. And then she slams her laptop shut because Lydia is smirking at her. Now that her computer is shut down, we can still hear her ranting on Skyla's connection because they were calling from different rooms in the same house. She's ranting about how Michael becomes a different and more bold person when his family is around, and about how he doesn't understand I don't know what happened because she wouldn't let him respond to anything. Finally, Sean asks what Michael meant by having a child the other way, and he insists that he was referring to IVF or adoption. Sean asks Michael if anyone in his family had more than one wife, and he tells us that his father had three wives. But Michael nixes the idea of taking on another wife. Angela has enough problems on her own, and he doesn't want to double his wife problems. Soon, Angela comes back to her computer and tells us some decidedly, let's say, un-PC stuff about how she has to hear about everyone else's culture, but no one talks about respecting American culture. So then we talk more about submission, because we haven't been around this drain enough times.
I know, right?
And how it's the American women shake their heads at it, and Kalani kind of nods along approvingly, since it's very similar to what's going on with the Asuelu. Libby and Tanya also chime in to say that there's some of that in their relationships too. When Michael says something about being the man, Angela cuts him off again and rants at him for a while and won't let him finish his thoughts before they both say they're done talking. But you know who's not done talking? Is Aunt Lydia. She keeps saying that the woman should be submissive of the man regardless of the culture. Angela counters with a very familiar sounding argument that she should respect her elders. Feel like that's come up in a tell-all with Angela before. And Angela is Lydia's elder. But Lydia says that in Nigerian culture, since she's been married longer, she's actually the elder. And then it comes around, and then eventually Sean asks, where do we go from here? And Angela says, to the courthouse, because apparently even though they're married, she'll never stop threatening Michael with the end of this relationship. Skyla and Lydia talk about think the relationship is pretty much doomed, but Michael thinks that when he gets to the States, we'll be able to work things out. Before closing, Angela tells us that she is planning on having weight loss surgery, which is a surprise to Michael, who doesn't want her to do it. Michael pleads with her because he likes big things. And if he were there, he would find a way to stop her, not just for aesthetic reasons, but because he's worried about the risks. All right, so I want to say there was an argument, but there wasn't. There wasn't much of a discussion because anytime anybody talked, Angela's told him to shut up. So, like, what happened here?
I don't know. But, you know, I honestly feel like this is so different. Like, Angela has been very well behaved in front of Aunt Lydia. And I think it's because she was always afraid that if she was rude to Michael's family, that they would somehow not give their blessing for marriage. Uh-huh. And now that they're married, I feel like Angela don't give a shit. And so she'll piss off Aunt Lydia. She don't care. And I just feel like Michael's going to get pressure from the family to leave Angela.
Yeah. I mean, so much of it is like, I watch this and I'm just like, why are they not saying this thing? You know, it's like watching the stupid debates, right? Yeah. I'm like, just say this obvious thing that I thought of sitting here in my living room. Why is no one saying this? Right. And like the thing to me was like, they kept saying submissive, submissive, submissive. And I'm like, listen, I don't care what culture you're in. The way you're screaming and yelling at him is not respectful on by anybody's definition of respect.
Right.
Like even America, European, African, whatever. Nobody mm-hmm. thinks it's okay to like not let your husband, not let your partner finish a sentence and scream at them. Like time to time, like that's not anybody's definition of respect, let alone submission or whatever.
I don't know if we're going to see them again, but I know that Skyla and Angela were on Pillow Talk.
Yes, the other they were. Way. Yeah.
Did you watch it?
No, I did not. No.
I heard some not so good things.
I don't think she'd be good on it.
Entertaining.
Yeah, because she's very much like, you know, the stereotypical class clown, right? Yeah. You know, we talked about class clowns. They're not usually very funny, right? They just get the kind of person who comes in and just like, oh, they're fat. What an idiot. Dummy. And just make noises in class. Like, and it's like, oh, that wasn't clever at all.
They're more of a distraction.
Yeah. And it's like, and they usually give class clown to the kid who won't shut up. Not the kid who's like actually clever and funny. He won't shut up and he keeps making jokes all the time.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I stopped watching Pillow Talk a long time ago. So it's like, I have no knowledge.
Oh, yeah. After I powered through The Other Way and Darcy and Stacey, I was like, nope, I'm done. I'm good. Yeah. Don't need more of that. And now it's so weird. They have all these other shows that are like, it's Pillow Talking the Pillow Talk. I'm like,
it's like, when is that going to stop? It's so ridiculous. But, you know, honestly, I wonder a little bit how much of that is because of quarantine, because, you know, it's like they're limited in what kind of programming they could come up with.
Right.
And doing kind of the Pillow Talk type shows doesn't require a whole like crew.
Right. It doesn't. They send them like tablets and ring lights, and there you go. Bing. There you go.
Right. So, yeah. Okay. So we still have to hear about Larissa and Eric and Cole and Jess still. So Eric tells us that he wants to have a child of his own one day, and he doesn't count cats. Larissa says that she would be open to having kids with Eric one day if they were married. Eric accepts her kids, and they want more or to adopt. Larissa updates us and says she has a work permit and she is still, but she's still concerned about her status. She doesn't have a backup plan if she gets deported, and Eric decides to joke fake a proposal. Colt asks when Eric is going to marry Larissa, and he takes the longest pause before he says, you know, I'll eventually get married. Colt thinks that they are perfect for each other and that they deserve each other. They then replay the Natalie and Larissa phone call clip, and Debbie and Colt wonder why Eric would say that to someone. Natalie joins the call, and Debbie cheers. Natalie tells us that her and Eric connected through social media, and when they first met, he just bashed Larissa. As she's telling her story, Larissa leans her head on Eric's shoulder. Natalie says that Eric is pathetic for trash-talking Larissa, and she has no reason to lie. Eric and Larissa then both attack Natalie. Natalie is disgusted that Eric talked about another woman like he did, and he keeps trying to put it on her like she's a slut and got delivered to his house like a hot pizza and keeps calling her girl. Larissa tells her that she's nothing. Tanya pipes in and says that Natalie was attacked almost immediately and for pretty much nothing. And for two women to go at it for something Eric did or for Eric is ridiculous. Eric then defends his meetup with Colt after his and Larissa's first breakup because he had heard so much about him and he feels like he was duped and reeled in by Colt and Debbie. Colt, Debbie, and Eric then argue briefly about who initiated the invite to hang out. Eric wanted to know what the drama was all about. Eric said that he didn't badmouth Larissa to everyone he came across. When Sean asked if he badmouthed Larissa to Colt, Eric tried to talk around it, and eventually, when push came to shove, he said no. Colt then says Eric confirmed that Larissa did the same shitty things with him, and then he throws in that he seriously doubts that Eric and Larissa ever had sex, then goes on to rant about how he doesn't want to imagine them having sex because it disgusts him. Larissa tells us that she is able to forgive Eric because she is Catholic-y. The power of forgiveness allows her to forgive, but She will never forgive Colt. Guess the power of forgiveness does not apply to Colt. I don't know. So then Jess says that she wants to move on. She just wants to forget. And so she's okay with forgiving Colt. She thanks Debbie for sabotaging her relationship with Colt because it led her to meeting a great man that treats her well. She then introduces her new boyfriend, Brian. She goes on about how great he is and then reveals that he just isn't just her boyfriend, but actually her husband. Colt gives a very hollow congratulations on her wedding, and he has to throw in their snarky green card. Jess had lost her job, so instead of doing long distance, they rushed a marriage so they could stay together. Brian says it's faster than he wanted it to be, but the connection is genuine and unique. Sean asks how Brian is in bed compared to Colt, and Debbie just wants to leave because she, you know, tries to pretend like she doesn't care and doesn't want any part of that conversation. Jess says that it's not just sex with Brian and that they actually make love. Colt puts in one last dig and says that he dodged a bullet with Jess and Larissa. So, Eric. And Colt. Which one's the trashier?
I would still say Colt. Like, and we're gonna get to this in the power rankings too. So, like, I would still say Colt. Like, because, and part of it is, okay, so who are the two people that we heard the worst stories about Eric from? It was Colt himself, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're... And this Natalie girl who, I'll be honest, I don't trust, right?
I trust her. Why would she lie about
so
that?
So the red flag she had to me was when they said, what did she say? What did he say? And she was like, well, it was so bad. I don't even want to share it with you guys. Which means that she probably thought what he said wasn't that bad.
No, because the thing is that she did tell Larissa what he said.
Right, but when in the tell-all, right, because we didn't hear what they said. All we heard was a bunch of beep,
beep, beeps.
Well,
because they had to bleep out every word.
Right, and so like, okay, so my thought was, I mean, obviously, the mind can imagine many, many terrible things he said, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to go in there, but I don't even know what he said. Did he said, oh, my last girlfriend didn't like to give blowjobs. Does that count? As like trash talking her and bringing up their like terrible stuff in bed. I mean, what did he say? Like, it depends on what he said as to what this reaction should be.
I don't know. But I mean, I agree with Angela kind of piped in and she said, like, you don't talk about your sex with anyone. So I don't care if you were talking about it like in a somewhat positive way, like what your girl does, you know, like it shouldn't have even been said. And so to me, like, I think they
says
all
Angela,
would
who
not
tells
deny.
Everybody in public what her and Michael do with
I
each
know,
other.
Right.
So she doesn't really have a leg to stand on with that. She tells no. says exactly what Michael
but
likes
I
and what Michael does.
I agree with what Angela says. I mean, I'm not saying anything about the source.
Right. So, but I mean, like, I feel like isn't that like part of like, you know, I'm speculating here. I mean, isn't that what girls talk about? Like, don't you talk about stuff like?
Yes and no. I think we talk about it more generally, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, did you guys hook up? Yeah. Oh, okay. We do not go into details, and I would say not all the time. It's possible.
I just think it's not – I mean, if you're – and especially if you're trying to – it's also different if you were actually trying to form a relationship with this next person mm-hmm. to be like, hey – I would like to talk about some of the things that went well and did not go well the last time I was in a relationship with somebody, you know, with this aspect of a relationship. That seems a little bit more reasonable than this, than just, you know, somebody you were, I guess, trying to hook up with is what I'm gathering.
I don't
know, what his relationship was with Natalie either.
I think he was trying to hook up with her because it definitely, like, the way he made it sound like, oh, she was slutty enough that she came to my house, you know. Blah.
I guess it does, but that seems like, also seems like really messed up if you're having the girl that you want to hook up with and she's at your house. I'm not going to bring up my ex.
No one said Eric was smart. Who said that Eric was smart? Who said Eric
Nobody.
Was a ladies'
because
man?
What was
no
this,
one.
What was the nonsense he was making up? Like, he uses these weird analogies nobody's ever heard, delivered like a pizza box. Who has ever said that before?
He's an idiot. He thinks he's so smart
and
so
says,
funny.
Your mouth is a toilet seat? What? Like, I feel like third graders come up with more inventive put downs than what he does.
I know I initially said that I would say Colt is worse than Eric, but no, I'm sorry. I've convinced you.
No, I still think Colt is worse. Because, I mean, Eric is, he's smarter. He's definitely smarter. Like, and he knows what he says is going to come across. And he understands, but he's terrible. Congratulations on your green card. Come on.
I know. What an asshole. Okay, Colt's worse.
All right.
But we'll get to that because we're at power rankings now.
No, we have to talk about Tanya and Sinjin.
Oh, okay. I forgot they had something.
Yeah, they had a little bit. So we come to, they actually talked about kids, right? We come to their segment with Sean asking about them, where they stand on kids. Sinjin is still very unsure, and Sean wonders how they didn't iron this out before they got married.
Seriously.
Tanya says it's not like he changed his mind once. He just kind of bounces around on it all the time. So he's always been indecisive about it. Sinjin says that right now, since there's so much self-work he needs to do, having kids right now is not something that he wants. Unsurprisingly, Sean presses the issue and asks if he ever wants to have kids. And he says he doesn't see himself with a child. Tanya says that in South Africa, he wasn't as stridently against children. Michael chimes in and is very confused because he doesn't seem to understand how anyone can just not want kids. In fact, he calls it absurd. They press him for about like 5 or 10 years from now, would you want kids? And Sinjin says, I can't answer that because 5 years from now is too late for Tanya, who agrees that she doesn't want to wait 5 years. But literally before right now, had not asked him anything besides vague assurances that he might want to have kids one day. So, I mean, I don't feel this whole thing was just like, just throw it on the pile for reasons they need to break up, right?
Yeah, they're going to eventually, I think this is going to be kind of the breaking point, because I think this is something that is a tangible result. This isn't something that you can say, oh, well, you know, like I can change, or, you know, like, oh, I can work on this. It's like, no, like you either have a kid or you don't have a kid. It's very black or white.
Right.
And I think the reason why right now it kind of seems like it's this intangible thing is because they can put it off. They can say like, oh, well, you know, we can work on it. Like we can work on, you know, building a life that will eventually support having a kid. But at some point it's going to be like either you have this kid or you don't have this kid.
Right.
And it's got to be like a actual event that happens or doesn't. And so I think that this will be eventually what breaks them up. And I'm actually kind of surprised that Tanya has like let it go this long, because she seemed to have super crazy baby fever. You know, when we first met them, she was like ready to have kids like back then.
Yes.
And this was like 2 years ago. And so I feel like this is a lot for her to be this patient, to still not really have a solidified answer. Like, you know, I think she's waiting for him to be like, yes, let's have a kid. Even if he said something like, give me 2 more years and then we can start trying, I think she would be okay with that. But sure. The fact that he's kind of leaving it kind of open-ended, I don't know.
I don't know. He would frustrate me just everything is I don't know. Like, yes, it's just like,
ugh. Right.
Like, but I mean, it's weird because she never pushed the issue. She just likes the idea so much that she's not committing to it either. Right. She said, I never really pressed him on it. He said one day he might be open to it. And that was good enough for me. I was like, that seems like not enough of an assurance for someone who had such crazy baby fever like 2 years
ago. Well, the thing is, though, I think Tanya is super stubborn and super willful. And so I think she just thought, oh, I'll convince this guy. It's happening or not, with or without him. Because I could also see her doing a thing where she's just like, OK, we're going to like, you know, like, make a baby, and then like being okay with him just leaving her for it. Uh-huh. You know, like seems like the kind of person who's like okay with being a single mom.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
like she doesn't need to do this with someone.
Right.
But I mean, like, even she said, like, at the beginning, she was just like, we would make beautiful babies. And so it's kind of like, I feel like that's why she's kind of sticking around.
Oh, man.
She's
that's such a creepy come on. Our children would be beautiful. Like, you're skipping many steps. Okay.
Well, Sinjin seemed to be into it.
Well, I guess he's just into her. Like they,
part, he I mean, is weirdly that's what, enough.
That's just what it seems like. Is they just? I feel part of me just feels like they stay together because they have good sex. Like, and they both are really into that. Like,
yeah.
All right. So on that note, power rankings.
Power rankings.
Which, as always,
finally,
very hard there. Clump at the bottom. Very hard to find what can rise to the top.
Yeah. Well, I think number one to me was easy.
It wasn't easy for me. No, I had trouble with literally every single one. I didn't want to put anybody at number one.
Okay. Well, I had Kalani as number one.
All right. So I had Karini as number one. Oh, and by the way, we're putting everybody
about Karini and Paul
in. You forgot Karini and Paul?
Yeah, I did.
Stick them in there somewhere.
Okay. Well, I will like to take back my number one, and I will give it to Karini as well.
So we are also putting Eric and Jess in these.
Yes.
Even though they weren't title card people, but.
You know. Right.
Yeah. Karini just, I don't know. She put up with a lot of crap.
She did.
And she dealt with it as well as she could. And especially all those parts where he tried to make her seem crazy. Right. And I still think he was unsuccessful in that because, you know, she was doing what she was supposed to be doing, what she needed to be doing. So I just felt bad for her most of this whole time.
I did too. I felt like she was trying to be open. I mean, it was pretty obvious that she didn't want to be in America.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like she keeps trying for him.
Right.
I mean, she doesn't have the best attitude about it, but at the same time, it's kind of like, out of all these people, you know, she did the least objectionable things.
I can't think of anything she did that was like...
Right, specifically. Yeah. Other than she could have had a more positive attitude overall.
Yeah, she could have a more positive attitude when her crazy husband drugged her to a different country and locked her in a house. Like, yeah, okay, I'll give her the bad attitude.
All right, so my number two is Kalani.
So my number two was also Kalani then.
Yeah, so Kalani, like, I feel like she put up with a lot. I feel like... I don't know. I just, her willingness to kind of try, kind of make things work. I don't know if that's good or bad. And so that's why I kind of.
Right.
Don't
that was
her
mine, too.
One.
Is like, I feel like she just needs to commit to ending it. And like, her hanging on is like the objectionable thing she did.
Right. But it still wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
All right. Who was your number three?
Michael.
Okay.
Because I couldn't think of that many objectionable things he did, but, you know, it's still this whole situation, this whole relationship, this whole kind of play. He does, Angela's not wrong, and he does kind of play both sides of his family, and he does kind of say one thing when he's in front of his family and other, and then like just you've been with this woman for how many years? So when you know that, like, how do you not have any tact? This is specifically in the tell-all. He never has tact, right? When she says, "Oh, you could be with another woman," and he goes, "Exactly." Like, what are you, stupid? Like,
you're right.
Because I know what he meant, but he should have been like, "Well, no, not another woman, but we could do IVF or adoption." Like, but he didn't say it like that. He said, "Oh, yes, exactly." After she said, "Be with another," like, come on, Michael. Like, you know better. So that's why he went down a little bit of notches, but really nothing all that objectionable.
Okay, so my number three is Jess.
Okay,
so I would say. Jess is guilty of choosing Colt as a partner.
Sure.
And then she did get irrationally jealous of Vanessa, although it ends up by accident that she was justified.
Yeah. Wasn't without
but at
merit.
The time, it was definitely irrational, right?
Yes.
So like her jealousy definitely was irrational, and her throwing a shoe at Colt, I think I can't tell if that helped or hurt her in this power rankings because I kind of want to throw shoes at Colt too.
Yeah, sure. I mean, my number four is Jess.
Okay.
Similarly, like I would say the irrational, the whole losing her shit on that night.
Yes.
Throwing Colt that's what took her down a notch. But you know, you can be better than that. But I mean, nothing else she did was really that objectionable. And, I mean, that and she was looking for a green card. Like, she really was.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, then I think the other thing that made her kind of a little bit higher too, because Michael was my number four.
Okay.
The reason why she made it a little bit higher for me was in the tell-all. I thought she had a very healthy way of like viewing Colt at the very end. You know, like, she's not trying to get with Colt. the same time, mm-hmm. she's, you know, she's ready to let it go. She's just like, I just want to forget it. It's fine. Like, just like moving on. And I thought that was like really mature of her.
Sure.
Which, you know, we don't really see that kind of maturity all that much in this show.
Right. Right.
Especially when you're dealing with assholes like Colt, you know, it's like you get kind of the same.
Yeah. You get kind of get that. They drag you down to their level sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. Yeah. So my number four was Michael. I would say the reason why Michael ranked lower than Jess for me was because of, I feel like he is a liar. He is a pathological liar, and he does it to save his own ass, not to get in trouble with Angela, you know. And granted, nothing he's lied about this season has been anything like life-altering, relationship-altering, or anything like that. It's just because he's trying not to, you know, get on Angela's bad side, but it just so happens that Angela is like 95% bad side, and so it's really hard to avoid.
It really is hard to avoid. So the only
way he can,
right.
Yeah, the only way he can avoid it is by lying. But then at the same time, it's like, well, if you have to spend your life walking on eggshells, maybe you should reevaluate your relationship.
All right. Number five. This one, I'm not sure if this is this might be just a relative one based on the other people in the thing, is Andre. Sure.
Okay.
All right. Because he's fine. I mean, he obviously negative points for the times he screamed at Libby, yelled at Libby, and the stupid almost fight he got in with Charlie when he was totally sloshed, right, at the dinner, right?
Yeah.
And but other than that, I mean, he was just trying to calm their stupid family down the entire time. And he was incredibly patient when he wasn't drunk about answering the same questions repeatedly. And the Moldovan wedding was fun.
Yeah. Okay. So Andre wasn't too much further down for me. But above Andre, I actually had Sinjin. Like, yeah, Sinjin's annoying. He doesn't know what he wants to do in life, but I think he's honest about it, and it's just not a good fit, you know? And, like, what did Sinjin really do? I don't think he really did anything that terrible. I mean, like I said, super annoying. I could never be with someone like Sinjin, like, someone that is that wishy-washy and, like, that unstable about, like, decision-making. That would drive me absolutely nuts. I would not be able to tolerate that at all.
When we get to Sinjin, I'll chime in on what I have to say about some of that, because he's a bit lower for me.
Okay. Oh, quite a bit.
Well, we'll see. Because yes, you know, not totally. Because at the bottom, I mean, there's some real treasures at the bottom. But
God, I know. Okay, so Andre actually was my number six, and kind of like what you said, like I feel like Andre didn't instigate anything.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Andre was more reactionary when it came to a lot of things. So it's not like he didn't do anything shitty this season, because he did. Like, but I feel like him yelling at Libby was in reaction to other things that were kind of happening.
Sure.
So he definitely could have afforded to keep his cool. But if family Libby weren't around, it would be a much different wedding situation and a trip and just a whole different season.
Yeah. All right. So my number six, and this is where it comes in. My number six was actually Tanya.
Okay.
I put her above Sinjin because a lot of the things you felt about Sinjin, I actually thought about her. She's not fooling anybody with what she wants and what she's doing and what she wants out of this relationship. And all she's doing is being honest about what it is that she wants. Like, I don't feel like she's leading anybody along. Right. She just is what it is. And it's different that he's so wishy-washy and she's not. And, you know, the amount of time she got, like, and, you know, knocked her lower because of how emotional she gets when she's doing that. Like, and not just emotional. Everybody gets emotional. I mean, it's emotional is the wrong word. But, like, she starts screaming,
irrationally
yelling.
Emotional.
Yeah. She gets, like, and she starts turning everything into a shouting match. Gets incredibly defensive about the way she feels, but she's not hiding the way she feels.
So Tanya was actually my number seven.
Okay.
And to be honest, if I'm being really honest with myself, I feel like this is residual from her first season.
Okay.
I don't like the girl, to be honest. I really just don't like the girl, you know? So it's hard for me to really kind of be like, oh, yeah, she didn't do anything wrong. Because it's just like, her very being on the show is like, I'm very against it. I don't want to see her anymore. She is just very annoying to me. I don't know. And I'm, you know, I'm just going to leave it at that. Like, that's why you get to be in the middle of my list.
Uh-huh.
Just, you know, you should be so lucky to be that far up. Because well, there were, be there were,
again, real treasures at the bottom here.
Oh, yeah.
We got to move down. Don't forget you have to squeeze Paul in there, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's in there. That was pretty easy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So seven. We were at seven because you just did Tanya. Okay. My seven is Libby.
Okay.
Right. Definitely lower than Andre because she, and we said it before, she's like, and I don't like this phrase terribly much, but I can't think of a better way to say it. She's not ride or die.
Like, yeah,
like there's so many times
ride or die for her family.
Yeah, she is for her family. Like she's in a conflict between her husband and her family, she always takes her family's side.
Yeah,
even when it doesn't make any damn sense.
Right,
like Andre is objectively right, and you're still taking your family's side.
Right. So my number eight was also Libby, because of those same things. It's just like you need to take your husband's side every once in a while. And I feel like, you know, Andre kind of has a point, like, you know, united front, at least.
Right.
Defend your husband in public, but then take him aside and tell him how he's wrong all you want in private.
Right. Well, she even would do that thing where they would decide something in private. And then as soon as they told their family, she would like, oh, well, I don't know about that.
But that's not how I really feel.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, why don't you talk about this in private when we were talking about this in the first place?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so then number eight, that's when I get to Sinjin, right? Because I feel like I had a different interpretation of it. I feel like his wishy-washiness is a form of dishonesty.
Okay.
And he's to the point where it's obvious to everyone that's around him that he doesn't want to be in this relationship, but he's still in this relationship. And he's still holding it on. He's still stringing it along. And it's like, at what point is stringing someone along make you the bad guy? Because I think he's way past that point.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just stringing her along for what reason? I don't know. His own selfishness. I can't figure out why he's still doing it. Right. And that's where I really think about it is. And I don't know if it's dishonesty with her or if he's being dishonest with himself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I feel like he's saying he's wishy-washy because he doesn't want to admit that he's done.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay. What about your number nine?
Yes, number nine is Larissa.
My number nine is also Larissa.
Okay. Because everybody else was worse. Like, I'm not a Larissa fan.
So I'll tell you why Larissa was my number nine. She is a victim of her own terrible choices.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, like, she made some pretty terrible choices. At the same time, she is the only one who suffered from her terrible choices.
That's true.
I feel like everything, you know, that people below her, it's like their terrible choices hurt and affected other people.
Okay.
Larissa's terrible choices really only just hurt herself.
Mm-hmm.
Because she had, it was like she had some pretty shitty things happen to her this season, right? But it's like you're choosing to be in a relationship with Eric. So you have to, like, I don't know. You can't be surprised that,
right,
you know,
I mean, the things she had, that she has her issues with immigration are all because of things that she's done. Like her issues with, I mean, not that, like, you know, I'm no fan of ICE, right? But so I don't want to be like, I don't want to take ICE's side in anything. But like, yeah, but it's all stuff that she's done. Her legal problems that she had at the beginning of the season.
Right.
All her issues, right? The reason she got fired from the show is her issues.
Right. Yeah. So it's just like, well, you know, you kind of sometimes feel bad, like, oh, you've had a rough, you know, place in life. But then at the same time, it's like, yeah, but it's also a direct result of decisions you have made.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. But at least she's not taking anyone down with her.
Well, not anybody that's worse than her.
Right.
All right. So number 10. And this one, I'm going to come with a huge caveat that I am only including on show things. Right.
All right.
If we include things that we have heard or think is suspected off show, he moves exactly to the bottom, and that's Paul.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
So if we're just including what we saw on the show, he, like I said, Karini was my number one because she took him dragging her to another country, not being able to support her, not being able to get a job. Not really, doesn't seem like he tried that hard to get a job.
No, not at all. And he keeps mooching off of his mom. He keeps mooching off of his mom. It's just,
nothing he did good. Nothing he did right. Yeah. The whole time.
Plantains. That's about all he did.
He got the place and then didn't put curtains on any of the windows. Like, he did.
Pillows.
He put pillows on the windows instead of curtains and left them there. And brought them two dogs. Ugh, everything. Everything bad.
Yeah. All right. My number is, are we on 10?
10.
10 is Angela. So, I mean, Angela, we said at the beginning of the season, was definitely like on this image rehabilitation tour, right?
Mm-hmm.
She was trying to come off as the sympathetic daughter of an ailing mom, of this stand-up meemaw who's taking care of all the grandbabies, like a caretaker, you know? And then, you know, towards the end, that's when it was kind of like coming off the rails.
Yeah, uh-huh.
True Angela's coming out where it's like, you can't tell me what to do. You know, you can't make me be submissive. Michael, like, how dare you even be in the same room as another woman? You know, like, you're an idiot. Let's call the wedding off. So it's just like all the same terrible things. But for the first half of the season, like, you do kind of feel like, wow, she's like actually someone who cares about the people she cares about.
Right.
You know, and really trying to take care of them, make their lives better.
Yeah. So Angela's 11 for me. So she's next up. And that's, I don't know. I'm just, for a while, it's like as crappy as a person as she is and as aggressive and, you know, mean and you know, she can be to not just the people she likes, but the people she is close to, I should say, but also complete strangers, like, whatever, all that not aside, but she knew how to make good TV.
Yes.
And she got boring this year. Every two episodes, she's going to get in a fight and say, I'm done. How many times is she going to say, I'm done?
Right.
And I'm just tired of hearing it. It's getting old. Her being like, I'm done. I'm not going to be submissive. I'm like, it's the same three things she says the whole time. And then she tries to make up for it when things are getting boring at the end, just by being super aggressive, right? And yelling and slamming the computer down and stuff like that. And it's, I don't know. But, I mean, still got some people below her, but not happy with her. You know, she gets saved by these other people.
Right. So who's up next for you?
Oh, that was my number 11. Did you do your number 11?
I thought my number 11 was, my number 11 is Asuelu.
Okay.
So Asuelu is not a good partner. Doesn't seem like a very attentive father.
Mm-hmm.
He like shuts down at the slightest, you know, sign of criticism. He's not someone you can communicate with. I have no hope for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, he is present sometimes. And he doesn't go on the offensive, I feel like, you know, whereas I would say the people below him are definitely the kinds of people that would like instigate things.
Okay. So, yeah, I am not at Asuelu yet. So we will give you my opinion on him in a little bit. My number 12, and this is where it's coming down. My number 12 is Eric.
Okay.
All right. And we already kind of talked about it, why my Eric is, I think, slightly above Cole. At this point, I'm not using the words better because better implies some sort of goodness.
Right.
He's slightly above Colt because Colt is a little more, he's a little smarter about it and a little, you know, Colt is a knife twister more than Eric is. Mm-hmm. Eric is just the, you're dummy, big dummy. Don't like the big dummy, right? But he's super selfish. The way he like talked about her boobs is an investment, super gross, right? And, you know, we talked so much about it. He's just, you know, not a good person, but not at the bottom of my list yet.
Well, he's at the bottom of my list.
I thought he might be. You're number 12.
My number 12 is Paul. So this was kind of tough for me. And I almost, you know, would say it's a tie between Asuelu and Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like they both have families to support. At least Asuelu gets that he has to work. Paul does not get that, and he's putting his family in a very difficult situation, trying to depend on his family, just making terrible decisions that affect him and, you know, his family.
Mm-hmm.
And I just get the impression that he's super lazy, just makes a bunch of excuses, likes to blame things on other people. And he just creeps me out. I mean, Asuelu does too. Like, I feel like they both have the off-camera, like, rage that mm-hmm. you don't see that's, like, super scary.
Yes, totally. Absolutely. Believe it. All right.
Your number 12?
My number 12 is Eric. My 13
okay.
is Colt.
Okay.
All right. 13 is Colt because I feel like I don't have to explain why Colt is such right. trash, because Colt is such trash. The whole season, every time he's been on, we talk about what trash he is. He's just, and the worst part about it is that, like, I kind of feel like I like Eric as higher because at least he's openly garbage uh-huh. and Colt pretends he's not. Except for these certain times, he still kind of thinks like, oh, I'm such a good guy. I congratulated her on her marriage and blah, 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 blah. But every once in a while, he lets it slip and does like the, you know, I like the fuck thing. But
yeah,
for the most part, he still is trying to play up. Oh, I'm just a good guy. And these terrible bitches, I'll get in my way. And I'm dodged a bullet with them. And shut up, guy. Like, drive me nuts.
Yeah, I think they're both kind of cut from the same cloth. Mm-hmm. But okay, so that'll kind of lead me to my last two. I have Eric and then Colt.
Okay.
So the reason why Eric is so far down and he's a little bit higher for you is because, you know, my biggest pet peeve when it comes to the show is fame whoring. And this guy true. Is like the epitome of fame whoring.
Yeah, that's true.
If Larissa was not on this show, I don't think he would be getting back together again with her. So there, right there, the only reason why he's on the show is because he gets some FaceTime, right? That he says that he's back with Larissa. But let's take a look at what he did when they weren't together and it wasn't, like, you know, being filmed. He was an asshole. He was talking shit about Larissa. He was hanging out with Colt. And then now that it's, like, on TV and, you know, he's, like, trying to play it off like, oh, I didn't do that. I never said anything. And he's such a freaking liar.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just doing it because it's all image to him, right? And so, like, even, like, with his disgusting remarks about, you know, Larissa's plastic surgery, it was kind of like, oh, I'm going to say something about her. I forget what he called him, like, boobies, some whatever immature thing he kept on referring to.
Right.
But it was just like he just kept on saying that because, you know, he's trying to be funny. He's trying to ham it up for the camera.
Sure.
He's trying to portray this like image. He's trying to fame whore so that way he can justify charging his $100 for his stupid cameos, you know? And so it's like that to me puts you on the bottom because you are scum. You are the exact reason why I cannot stand, like, this YouTube influencer, like, culture and things uh-huh. like that.
Right.
It's because it's like you're trying to be famous for nothing.
For nothing.
So you
have
can
no
be,
talent. He has no talent.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. He has no talent, but he's trying to charge $100 on Cameo. Like, get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, that's why Eric is second to last for me. Okay. Colt is worse because he is kind of doing the same thing, but what he's trying to get out of his fame isn't the fame itself. Whereas I think with Eric, sure. he's trying to monetize it and he's, you know, just trying to get the fame itself. Colt is trying to get attention from women
yeah.
through his fame whoring ways. But then at the same time, he doesn't treat them very well.
No.
You know, he treats them like absolute shit. Like, do I think that his relationship with Jess started off as being transactional? 100%. You know, and but the thing is that he was really awful to her. And then he keeps on pretending, like you said, he's the nice guy. He's not a nice guy at all. Like, I mean, even at the tell-all, it comes out that, oh, by the way, I was cheating on you this entire time that I told you like nothing was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I lie, you know, to women. I send dick pics. I'm like desperate for attention. Oh, but I'm changing my ways. It's like, no, you're not. You're going to be the same asshole for the rest of your time.
Sure.
And you have a sidekick who will keep on telling you, like,
everything, you're great. Best. You're the perfect. You're the best. Yeah. It's these other women who are crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear that. So yeah. I feel like it's weird because I feel like our bottom ones kind of mm-hmm. picked off on, you know, different They kind of trigger different parts of what makes us mad. And my bottom one is a Swelu. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to judge it. It's because I'm a dad.
Yes.
And he is a dad. And he is a shitty dad. And
deadbeat dad. Sure.
He is like, I'm going to say the worst dad imaginable because, you know, for all we've seen, he doesn't seem to abuse the children or anything like that. No, right.
Sure.
But in terms of scales of dads, he barely seems to tolerate them. He will not help out with them. He is not teaching them like a good, he's not instilling in them any kind of, you know, good ethics in terms of conflict resolution, in terms of work ethic, in terms of like all this stuff. I mean, the way he just shuts down, the way he just doesn't do anything. He doesn't seem to care about anybody but himself, and you cannot do that and be a dad, right? So mm-hmm. I think he is as big of a jerk as some of these other people. He just doesn't, he knows not to yell on camera, and he knows not to snip on camera.
Right.
But he still goes off and does his little thing. And then, you know, but it, from where I'm sitting is he's worse because whatever, Colt can go be an asshole and he's only going to bother Colt. You know, Eric can mm-hmm. go be an asshole and he's only going to bother Eric. Like, he has his kids that he's supposed to be responsible for, and he's pulling the same kind of crap. And that gets before, and there's nothing, the thing, all this is besides his stupid COVID stuff of going out mm-hmm. and like pretending the disease isn't this. He's going to give his children, his mother-in-law, and this disease. Like, he just angered me on so many levels, on so many things. Yeah. It kind of feel like it's another term that gets overused a lot, but like toxic masculinity, like mm-hmm. that's him. That's him. Like, that's mm-hmm. like the, using I'm a man, not as a reason to step up and, you know, be strong and do what you're supposed to do and take responsibility, but using I'm as a man as everybody else should be taking care of my shit. Like, so many reasons. I really didn't like the guy.
Fair. All right. So we are done with these happily ever after people for a while.
Yeah. So we're going to keep coming back with more the other way. We don't know how long that's going to last.
No idea.
And we have no idea what's coming after that.
No. Well, we have determined Family Chantel is premiering tonight. I said, I put my flag in the ground. I am not watching that show. So.
I can't watch it either. We're going to skip it. Like, all right, it's weird
so
because
Mr. O says no.
Yeah, I say no. Ugh. All right. So we will be back next week to just talk about The Other Way and Darcy and Stacey.
Yes. All right.
And that's about it. All right.
Okay. So we'll see y'all next week.
See you next week. All right.
Okay. Bye.